Yesterday and today mark two significant days on the Chabad calendar, connected not to the Rebbe most of us know, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, but to his predecessor, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, known as the Friedeker Rebbe. And I was asking you if you knew what the Yiddish word for Friedeker means, and it means previous, but I shouldn't boast. I only found that out when I was chatting earlier with Rabbi Levi Lipskar of Chabad Hyde Park, and who's also the director of development of Chabad Lubavitch South Africa, and he joins us now on the line, and he was helping me touch up on my Yiddish, a whole three words I think I know in Yiddish. Rabbi, thank you so much for joining us. I wanted to ask you, the current or the previous Rebbe was very well known, but for those who are not familiar, who was Friedeker Rebbe, and why are these two dates so significant in Chabad history?
Thanks, Paula. Good afternoon to you and to the listeners, and always wonderful to be back with you. I believe that Chai FM has a Yiddish show, so it might help you with your Yiddish language.
Thank God you're not suggesting that I go and anchor it, though, because we did an April Fool's where we pretended I spoke Russian and people had a near heart attack, and my Russian is worse than my Yiddish.
Beautiful. So the previous Lubavitch Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, was actually the father-in-law of the seventh Chabad Rabbi, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and came from a long dynasty of the Chabad Rabbis. In fact, there were seven Chabad Rabbis, many of whom were the son after son. However, the most recent, our Rebbe, was the son-in-law of Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson. And he was primarily involved. Obviously, Chabad was in Russia at that time, behind the Iron Curtain and under communist Soviet rule. And in addition to assisting his father from a very young age, in fact, his father, Rabbi Shalom Dovber of Lubavitch, who was the fifth Chabad Rebbe, appointed his son, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, as his secretary at the age of 15 years old, because he had that depth and that quality and that knowledge. But his primary and energetic, far-reaching was his public activities, even though at that time in Russia, it was something which was certainly not allowed and certainly frowned upon. The Rebbe often single-handedly continued to do his work and spurred on to much greater efforts in the years where there was actually nobody who was looking after the Jewish community, opening schools, opening yeshivas, ensuring that Jewish practice could continue under dire, dire circumstances. Go ahead. And this really came to a head in 1927, and he's had taken a great stand against those that really wanted to undermine any type of Jewish life, Jewish religion. And there's a fascinating story that was once told that the Rebbe was in the shul and he was davening, and there was three members of then known as the Yevsektsiya, who were actually Jews who worked for the KGB. They stormed into the shul and guns in hand to arrest him, and he calmly waited till he was finished davening and then followed them. And as he's facing this group of armed men and seeming very, very calm, one of them said to him, "You see this little toy in my hand? This has made many a man change his mind." And the Rebbe very calmly responded. He said, "That little toy can intimidate only the kind of man who has many gods, many passions, many materialistic views, but only one world," referring to this physical world.
Amazing.
He said, because I only have one God and two worlds, I'm not so impressed by your little toy.
Rabbi, when I spoke to you before, you mentioned that the name for Lubavitch comes from the town or the city of Lubavitchi, which is where this Rebbe was actually born. And I looked it up after we spoke, and it's actually present-day Smolensk, which is in Western Russia. And thanks to working for Russian television, I've actually been there, but I had no idea that it had such a history in the Lubavitch movement. Is there anything there today about Chabad? Because when I was there, not knowing anything, I didn't go looking, and I can just tell you that my impression was really just a small town, almost steeped in history and not really part of the world today. It was nothing really interesting to look at.
So it certainly wouldn't be the center of the Chabad world or the Lubavitch world at this point. And although there is still a little village there and some of the Rebbes who are interred there, it certainly is one of those small farming little towns. And although Chabad comes from there initially, certainly not by any stretch of the imagination, the center of the Chabad world.
Now, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Schneerson, who we're talking about, was the sixth Rebbe of the Chabad Lubavitch Hasidic movement. Can you just give a little bit of background? I mean, who was the first, and how did it come to be that the Schneerson family would be the family of the Chabad movement?
Fascinating question. I hope that we've got hours and hours on end. We can start a little series.
Yes. Well, if I can just let listeners know that I'm becoming so interested in Chabad, and I go to these Chabad events where everybody has the doors and arms welcome. And I texted you to say I feel like I'm becoming, I don't know what I said exactly. I wouldn't want to say a groupie of Chabad, but a big fan. And you said there could be worse callings in life.
Right, absolutely. So where it started was in the early years, before there was any sort of mystical type of teaching of the Torah. The Baal Shem Tov was the first to be told by God that the time had come to now begin teaching the mystical inner dimensions of Torah. And he had a student who then had some more students, and one of those students was Rabbi Shneur Zalman of Liadi. And he was the founder of the Hasidic movement in approximately 1773, if I'm not mistaken, and began this idea of teaching with chachma, with wisdom, with bina, with a sense of understanding and das, and really taking the Torah that we study and developing it into our behaviors and the way that we hold ourselves. And so that family became the Rebbes, as it were, of Chabad, and son after son, became the Rebbes of Chabad.
Now, today and yesterday mark the days that the Rebbe that we're talking about, which is Friedeker, the previous Rebbe, was released from the Soviet prison. What impact did his arrest and eventual release from that prison have on the broader Jewish world at the time?
So fascinatingly, you know, the struggle of him constantly working to keep Judaism alive in Russia came to a head in 1927. He was arrested. He was placed in solitary confinement in a terrible prison known as Spalerno, and he was actually sentenced to death. But because Chabad's name had begun to disperse throughout the world, there was some intervention of foreign leaders that convinced the Soviet government to save his life. And instead of being executed, he was then banished to Kostroma, to exile. And with continued pressure, he was actually released or informed on the 12th of Tammuz that he would be released, which was quite miraculous. It was very unheard of for the authorities to give in to any type of pressure. Mm-hmm. And I believe that it was because on the 12th of Tammuz, it was some sort of public holiday in Russia. So he was informed on the 12th of Tammuz, which was actually his birthday. And the very next day on the 13th of Tammuz, he was permitted to leave. And not long after that, again, with further intervention, he was able to leave Russia.
Now, he's often credited with saving Jewish life in Europe and the United States before and during the war. Can you share how he did that?
So he left Russia and he moved to Riga in Latvia. And immediately, you know, without skipping a beat, he established a Talmudic school in Riga and began to encourage people, even there in war-torn Europe, to continue practicing and to continue maintaining their faith and continue maintaining their practices so that it would never be forgotten. And he eventually came to America in the middle of the war, and it was actually in March of 1940. And the welcome that he got when he arrived in America, thousands of followers and representatives of various organizations, people from the government, he was actually handed the keys to the city, as it were, when he arrived in New York. Such was his legacy.
Wow.
And when he arrived in America, one has to understand that this is 1940. Those that had managed to come to America and escape war-torn Europe, there were those that decided that they would close themselves off. If they had retained any sort of religiosity, they would close themselves off, not be involved in the world. Then there was another school of thought who said, if there's, you know, even if there is a God, how could he have done this to us? And they completely assimilated into what was known as the melting pot of America. And his statement upon arriving in America in Yiddish was, America is nicht anders. America is no different. Just because we are now in the free world, so to speak, it doesn't mean that we forget where we come from. And he immediately again established the yeshiva, the special Chabad yeshiva, and began to send emissaries, although not as on mass as Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, he began sending emissaries to various places to open various schools, to open centers of Jewish life, and essentially can be credited with laying the foundations for saving the Jewish people.
How do his teachings still shape Chabad's work today, especially here in South Africa?
So essentially, even the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, in almost every discourse, in almost every talk that he gave, referenced the teachings of the previous Rebbe. But it's more his message of that although we find ourselves in a world that sometimes seems freer, we have to remember who we are. We have to remember that we have roots, and we have to remember that we have a legacy to uphold. And so that theme of we are not going to be different just because we're in a different country, just because we're in a different set of circumstances, and we have to remain Jewish, and we have to remain proud, and we have to remain connected, is something that certainly shaped the way that the Rebbe established this network of Chabad worldwide.
And that was really what I wanted to ask you as a last question. In many ways, his leadership paved the way for the Rebbe we know best, Rebbe Schneerson. How did their missions align or differ?
Their missions were actually one and the same, and obviously finding themselves in different times and different stages, the Rebbe actually waited an entire year after the passing of the previous Rebbe to accept the mantle of leadership. Such was the humility of the Rebbe. But he constantly continued with the same theme, spreading out, spreading love, spreading kindness, spreading Torah, spreading a sense of, I will find every Jew wherever they found them, wherever they find themselves. You know, if Hitler sought out every Jew with hate, the Rebbe's sought out every Jew with a sense of love, zero judgment, and a real sense of care and concern. In fact, the Rebbe wouldn't leave his office very often. It's well known that the Rebbe didn't travel out of New York once he became the Rebbe. But the one place that he went very often was to the gravesite of the previous Rebbe to pray. Often when somebody would ask for a blessing from the Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson, he would say, Askir ala Tzion, I will mention this at the gravesite, meaning he gave great reverence, great respect. He was, although a son-in-law, was more like a son and a really connected son who took the mantle and took it to the next level.
How beautiful. Thank you, Rabbi Lipska, for helping us rediscover the voice and vision of a leader who quietly shaped Jewish destiny. The Friedeko Rebbe may not be as well known as his successor, but his legacy continues to ripple through our lives, both here in South Africa and beyond.